Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin, broadcasting from the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. And once again today we have on the podcast Dr. Thomas Woodward, author of Doubts About Darwin and Darwin Strikes Back, who we've actually discussed those books on the podcast before. And we're honored to have Dr. Woodward back on the show today to talk about a recent talk that he gave at a Darwin versus Design symposium at La Sapienza University in Rome, Italy. And so, Dr. Woodward, it's really great to have you back on the show.
Thanks so much, Casey. It was a great trip, and I appreciate you making the connections for me with these people, the professors and students there in Rome.
Well, I was overjoyed to hear your report because it sounds like the lecture was a real success, and I want our listeners to be able to know about your lecture because it's important for people to understand that there actually is discussion and activity going on with regards to intelligent design overseas, including in Europe. So why don't you just tell us, where was this talk, and how did this whole talk come about?
Well, Kay, the talk was at La Sapienza University, which I am told is the largest and oldest university in Italy. It's located really in downtown Rome. It's kind of like a city within the city, probably, a mile and a half or 2 miles east of the Colosseum. And with 130,000 students, you can imagine that the physics department alone probably has, 1,000 or 2,000 students. I mean,
wow.
I've never been in a place like this. So my lecture and the lecture of a top Italian evolutionist, Professor Boncinelli from the University of Milan, he came down from Milan on the train, and I flew in from, of course, Florida. But it was held on January 17th on a Wednesday afternoon. We had a really packed out room. It was a kind of one of these lecture halls that you look up, it's like a bleachers, And I assume the room held normally maybe 120, 130, but there were close to 200 people jammed in the room. Every seat filled, everybody filling the stairways, people standing on both sides and clustered at the door. It was quite a sight to behold. And the two of us did like about a half hour talk to kick off, of course, with translation. Mine stretched to closer to an hour, and then we had very lively Q&A, some from the moderator, Lorenzo Fontolan, a fifth-year physics student, and then quite a few from students and professors. A lot of the professors were really not necessarily agitated, but very intense in throwing every question at me that they could. I loved every second of it. It was a really terrific opportunity.
Now, Tom, I know that you have spoken all over the place, and it's not like we are podcasting every lecture that Tom Woodward gives. So why do you feel like this lecture in particular is important for our listeners to know about? What's so unique and special about this lecture?
Well, number one, that it took place at a secular university. This is not a haven of any kind of theistic or conservative, nothing of the sort, is present at La Sapienza. It's like the NYU. I mean, it's like UCLA transported to downtown Rome. And so the physics department would have, the courage to sponsor something this controversial was significant. That it happened in the oldest and one of the most largest and respected universities in Europe is significant. That, the lecture hall I use is where some of the Nobel laureates, physicists from Italy, used to lecture. So it was a really exciting venue. But the caliber of the guy they brought down is one of the top, I'm told, one of the top 12 or so evolutionary biologist in Italy, Dr. Boncinelli.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, why don't we actually talk about him a little bit? I'm sure that our listeners would be interested to know, what does one of the top Italian evolutionary biologists say? What are some of his best arguments for evolution against intelligent design?
Okay, well, quite frankly, he gave a standard. His opening lecture was pretty standard, cut from the standard cloth. Darwinism. Darwin's theory in its modern neo-Darwinian format, natural selection acting on random mutations, is the stuff of the theory. And he did discuss very briefly saltationism, Stephen Jay Gould, et cetera, and their theory of a punctuated equilibrium. He mentioned the neutral drift theory, Kimura and others. At the end, he just kind of dismissed, he lumped intelligent design in with creationism, which of course is a standard rhetorical ploy. Which I demonstrated the falsity of that through my historical overview. But he lumped them together and just dismissed them with a flip of the wrist. And when I came in, I gave not only a historical background of how ID was rooted in empirical critiques, and that really had no connection with creationism. I mean, the data on that is very clear, very overwhelming. But I tried to show that the strong case for design from empirical study of data using Bildebsky's, you know, explanatory filter. This is tremendously important new work in mathematics, and I tried to show the theory is young, but it's robust. It's really making waves. And I just throughout the day, his arguments were, I don't think he had done his homework. I think Dr. Bonaccinelli was maybe underprepared, but it was a very exciting, just educational experience. I think it was very very well balanced, and the spirit in the room was very lively but very good.
Now, Tom, you are probably the expert on Darwinist arguments, since your book, Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design, is about analyzing the arguments of Darwinists. And so you are definitely someone who's very familiar with this. I would like to know from you, Dr. Bonaccinelli, how would you categorize him in terms of his arguments against ID? Were they fair? Were they informed? I know you said he didn't do enough homework. You know, obviously, there's a lot of different Darwinists you've encountered. So just give us a really a rhetorical scholar's analysis of his arguments.
Well, his argument really was minimalistic. I mean, he said in so many words, your argument is just pointing out gaps or, you know, mysteries in our knowledge of evolution. And that's illegitimate. That's not a theory. That's just scattered criticisms. So your theory, your idea doesn't even come up to the level of a scientific theory. It's just scattered pot shots. And I immediately replied, just, you know, to set the record straight, I immediately replied that the work of Bildebsky through Cambridge University Press has minimal mention. I mean, it's barely mentioning Darwinian evolution at all.
Yes.
It's attacking the question of how we detect design, the intrusion, if you will, of designing agents in any natural system.
Yes.
And he used low probability compared with high, with a very clear specification, the independent target specification. And I said, you know, this is important theory just from a mathematical, statistical, you know, part of just detecting design. I said, so it's a positive paradigm, it's a positive theory. And then I stressed, I really kept coming back to another professor who was attacking me. Well, you guys never do lab work. And I said, no, we do. And I stressed the work of people like Doug Axe, and especially the professor at the University of Wisconsin, Superior campus, that is, Dr. Ralph Silke, who has literally taken Behe's work and turned it into a huge extended experiment with mutant bacteria. And the bacteria that he's messed up on one of their five main proteins of this, this protein system that produces tryptophan, the tryptophan operon system he's twiddled, you know, has shown the bacteria are utterly incapable of repairing even just two digits at the same time after trillions and trillions of tries. So, as I said to me, we have now empirical evidence that really disqualifies this random mutation selection mechanism as doing anything, much of anything. What can evolution do? Not much. My translator was struggling a bit, but I was delighted that when I got to that point, I dropped a one-liner, the humor one-liner, and the room exploded with laughter.
That's
so I think
great.
in spite of the struggles, they got my points there.
That's great. And I think you make a great point there, Tom, because one of the things that I think is most interesting about the work of William Dembski, especially when you read his book, The Design Inference, from Cambridge University Press, it really, I mean, he does talk about Darwinian evolution in the book, but it's really actually a very fairly minor component of the overall argument. What
right.
it always comes down to is information. Intelligent mm-hmm. agents produce information.
Exactly.
And we can detect that in so many different venues, including biology. And so I think that that's a very good point. And I think that you probably really taught a lot of people at that lecture about intelligent design and corrected many of their misconceptions. And that's another question I want to ask you. How often has a lecture like yours been given in a venue like this in Italy in terms of promoting intelligent design and talking about skepticism of evolution? Is this something that happens there very often? Do they often allow people like you to speak?
No, from what I've been told, it's virtually a first. I know that Sermonti, I think the biologist Dr. Sermonti, is known for his work in Revista di Biologia, and he's actually been marginalized for his outspoken skepticism of the current theory of macroevolution. But I was told that this is the physics students that organized this and the physics department that organized it said this is, as far as they know, the first ever for the country of Italy. And, you know, I knew it was, you know, since it's a radical idea for many of the attendees, I tried to, you know, agree with points I could agree with. I try to agree with Darwinian microevolution. I said that's, you know, that's very, very robust theory. Makes a lot of sense. It's got a lot of support. And I tried to show that design theory is new. We're not demanding that it be taught in public school systems. We're just saying, you know, study both sides. Study Darwinism, study ID, and keep an open mind.
So in other words, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, basically.
Well, yeah, I guess if you mean by what do in Rome what the Romans do refers to their open-mindedness, their willingness to evaluate both theories fairly. And that's what I stressed. You know, when I was talking at that point, I said, you know, study intelligent design theory, become aware of its ideas and its background and both the critique and the counter-critique or the defense. And I said, study in Darwinism. I actually heaped a little bit of praise on Charles Darwin as somebody who was a brilliant scientific theoretician with great ideas, who stressed the importance of taking a look at both sides of this debate. I said, so study both sides and keep an open mind. And when I said that, I think I got the strongest reaction, I mean, the strongest positive applause of reaction of the whole day, at least on my side. But I really did, all along, stress the importance of hidden biases. You know, there was a big bottle of water on the table. I said, let this bottle of water represent a naturalist bias, the bias that says universe is all that there is, just a closed system. I said, a lot of people are not willing to keep that on the table. They hide it below the table. So I wished it underneath the table where I was sitting. So I said, we should need to take those biases of those worldviews, whatever we have, and put them back on the table. So I plucked the water from underneath the table and stuck it on the table again, trying to just demonstrate the importance of philosophical naturalism as something that constrains the debate and tells people ahead of time how it will turn out, even though they haven't checked the evidence yet.
Mm. Wow, Tom, well, it sounds like your lecture was a success and that you really opened a lot of people's minds up and that they were receptive to thinking about evolution critically. So is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I can tell you that the students clustered out around me for like another half hour. After this two-hour symposium, I had like an additional half hour of opportunity and like another 2 hours the next night, 15 grad students in physics and computer science and whatnot took me out to a restaurant. So I had an additional 2.5 hours. I recommend Italy, Rome, Italy, for anybody who wants to instruct on ID. You get to do so over some sumptuous Italian food.
Well, I won't disagree with you there. I went to Italy last summer, or actually 2 summers ago, and met a student from MIT, and we ended up going out to eat, and we ended up talking about ID and evolution over wine and pasta at a Roman cafe, so I definitely agree with you.
And I can say that the in Unlocking the Mystery of Life video, which is so popular in the U.S. and academic circles that deal with ID, is actually become quite popular over there, and we hope to do an Italian dub of it this year.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom. This is Tom Woodward, author of Doubts About Darwin and the recent book Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design. We appreciate having him on the show. This is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast, signing off. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Pennant. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.